The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and it's been a packed week for reality TV between our usual new episodes of Miami and OC, to the Love Island reunion, to the surprise Potomac trailer, some unexpected updates on Jen Shaw and Karen Huger from prison. There's a lot to discuss. First off, I just have to make sure everybody knows that season 3 of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives is dropping on Hulu on November 13th. I feel like that's a long ways away considering they had already started filming the third season when the second season dropped. But beggars can't be choosers, so I'll take it. I do wish that Hulu would do week-to-week drops, especially for this show in particular. I just feel like it's such a conversation starter, and it's kind of overwhelming to get all 10 episodes of this show at once, especially because November 13th is the beginning of BravoCon weekend. So all of us Bravo fans will be paying very close attention to what's happening in Vegas. I'll likely be in Vegas, so I don't know how that's going to work, because I feel like that's the kind of show where if you don't watch it right when it comes out, you're behind in the conversation. But yeah, that's our premiere date, and I'm very much counting down the days until then. So yeah, let's get into these prison updates. I've been unfortunately or fortunately referring to this week as Real Housewives Prison Week, because we did get some really unexpected updates. So the first is that Karen Huger, the Grand Dame of Potomac herself, is going to be released from prison this coming Tuesday. As in 4 days. Wild. I feel like her time behind bars flew by. And I think what's really interesting about it is that Karen, we haven't seen her mugshot. We haven't seen any blurry photos of her, you know, in the prison yard. We have gotten zero. We haven't heard from her. We have gotten zero updates or seen any footage of her during her time in prison. It's obviously very different from the other person I'm going to talk about. And I think that's obviously intentional. Like, Karen has had it zipped up and buttoned up. And I think that's, you know, kudos to her, because I think she clearly wanted to control it. And she did it well. I respect her for it, you know. And I think that makes her likely inevitable return to Potomac that much more intriguing, that much more impactful. And I also kind of think it signals to me that she really took it seriously. You know, she wasn't worried about people remembering that she was behind bars and reminding people she exists, like a lot of, I think, celebrities do in these situations, as we've seen in the past. She did her time, put her head down, and I respect her for that. Because you know what? She was convicted. She's done her punishment. And as far as I'm concerned, she's kind of, it's a wash, you know? So anyway, yeah, I thought the Potomac was still filming. So when we got the news that Karen was going to be released, I was like, oh my God, they're still filming. Karen just got released, like, camera's up, done. But they must have wrapped a while ago, because we unexpectedly got the trailer on Thursday, which I'll talk about, obviously. But yeah, I kind of also love that not much was known similarly about production for the season. I feel like we heard basically nothing the whole season. We didn't see much. We obviously knew that Monique was going to come back, which was inevitably going to be leaked, and Bravo announced it themselves. So that was sort of the biggest thing that we heard. But I love when we don't hear anything. It makes the surprise drop of a trailer and the reveal of what the season's about that much more impactful again. So yeah, it was very unexpected that we got the trailer this week, but I'm not complaining again. And I would very much expect that, you know, in some way there's going to be some sort of cameras up, pickup scene situation, whether that's the day she's out or, you know, they give it some time, because they can just tack it on to the end of the finale. So they have time to figure that out. And Karen has time to kind of settle back into her life if she doesn't want to do it right away. But I feel like the door is wide open. I feel like the judging by the trailer, again, the all indications point to Karen returning to the show again, whether it is in a pickup scene, you know, in the finale for season 10 or the reunion or just waiting until season 11, who's to say? But my guess is we get the pickup scene in the finale, kind of at the end, and maybe a guest appearance at the reunion. I don't know. Or maybe a one-on-one sit down with Andy. I would honestly take a whole special. I would take a one-on-one. I would take an extra episode. I think a good way to do it might be to like make the finale 90 minutes and add 30, you know, the 30 minutes at the end be sort of about Karen's release and kind of documenting that time period. I think they could do it in a lot of different ways, and I just hope they do it, and I hope Karen's down for it. Because I think it would be nice to see that story and see how much maybe this time behind bars has changed her. So that was a really happy update. I think that was kind of universally celebrated that Karen Huger is about to be a free woman. And the other update from prison over in Texas is that Jen Shaw is going to be released in about 365 days. She's going to be, her release date was moved up again. And it's funny because that news came out the same week that Coach Shaw visited her in prison to celebrate their 31st wedding anniversary. And we got not one, but two couples photos of them. One is sort of in this DIY photo booth of sorts, which was hilarious. He was holding up this sign that said like period on it. And then the other one was them smiling. And she has these sort of like 90s buns kind of in her hair. And she's wearing these like 90-ish sunglasses. And they look good. They look happy. And again, her release date was moved up. So I was really curious if, you know, Bravo viewers online, if they want her to come back to Real Housewives of Salt Lake City once she's released. Unanimously, people said no. 78% said no on Threads and 63% said no on Twitter. I very much am in line with that opinion. I don't want her back on the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I think the show has moved past her for right now. I think we don't need her back. And I think it's very much actually thriving without her, actually. I think she was kind of a dark shadow over the show. And obviously, those first two seasons especially were great. The third season was good, not as good. And she delivered, but I also never really thought that she was giving us authentic TV personally. So, you know, I'm good. I also think that she really pissed off Andy Cohen when she pulled out of the reunion. She refused to do a one-on-one sit down with him. She lied about being innocent until the 11th hour. So I think that's a lot to ask of her to try to like win back the favor of Andy and Bravo in that way. So I don't know. I feel like if Jen Shaw returned to the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, it would represent sort of like the biggest turnaround for a housewife when it comes to her relationship with Andy Cohen and the network. I think that would be a huge signal that like you'd have to go really far to really never be brought back. And obviously Nene represents that. I mean, obviously at the same time, it would be huge ratings, right? It would be like the television event of the year on Bravo. So, you know, Bravo is a network, it's part of a big business and they want ratings and that's how they make money. And if bringing Jen Shaw is enough of like an enticing idea in that regard, I could absolutely see it happening. I just don't really need it to happen. But again, Jen Shaw did her time. You know, she paid for her crime. And, you know, that I think that's the argument that a lot of people would make to say that she should be able to come back. And I'm not saying that she shouldn't be able to. I'm just saying I don't really need it. I don't really want it. But I also think that people have compared her to Teresa and her coming back and then them actually holding the show for her. And that's semi-valid, but very different situations, because also Jen Shaw, her crimes had a lot of direct victims of her crimes. And I think that, you know, I think Teresa and Jen had varying levels of knowing in terms of the crimes they committed. So I don't know. I don't think that Bravo's necessarily above bringing her back. I just don't. Again, it's not.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Not really something that I want That being said, I would love for her to tell that story and to document that time in her life, whether that is on another show, on a podcast, in a big interview, a docuseries, you know, I don't know, like in a book form. I would eat that up. And I would eat it up if it was on the show. I'm not a fool. But my vote is no to Housewives for right now, personally. And I talked more about this on my friend Dylan Hafer's podcast, Mention It All for Betches. So look out for that on Tuesday as well. All right, so let's talk about that season 10 of Real Housewives of Potomac trailer. Because you know what, you guys? We're so fucking back. We are so back. Potomac struggled there for a few years, and that last reunion, the season 9 reunion, when Mia stormed out early, Karen wasn't there, it was like, you know, are they going to be able to even give a good reunion after this okay season? That reunion, as you have heard me say many times on this podcast, was incredible, one of the best in the modern Housewives era. It was funny, it was drama, it was unexpected. And they all carried their weight. And it just felt like it had unlocked this new energy for the show. And it was, I think we all were kind of holding our breath to see if season 10 could deliver on the promise of that reunion. It could sort of kind of take the baton and just keep running with it. And that's exactly what this trailer feels like. It's so exciting. It really feels like season 10 will just be a continuation of the reunion and some of the things that popped up there. And that's just such an exciting prospect. And the vibes are good. The vibes are so fucking good, you guys. Like, I think on Twitter, I called this both a return to form and a new era for Potomac. That's what it sort of feels like. It's like they're back to what they're good at, right? But it also feels like they're looking forward. They have these three sort of pillars of the show in Giselle, Ashley, and Wendy right now, with Karen gone and Mia gone. We have Kiarna and Stacey from last season, who are familiar faces, and we're still getting to know them. But we also have these two new flute holders, and Tia and Angel. And then we also have Monique and Jazzy as friends of the cast. Like, it's a really nice layered cast in terms of when they were added to the show. And it's just, it feels good. And it's, this trailer, I love how Potomac, I feel like Potomac trailers love to do this sort of like rose-colored glasses, flowery kind of like blurred edges treatment to their trailers that sort of flash forward and back. And this year's is no different. It starts and ends with Giselle writing a letter to Karen in prison. It's just, it's both serious and unserious. You know, it's very knowing, but it's also kind of sweet that she's writing her letter about sort of updating her on the group. And to me, it really just signals that, you know, there is still a place for Karen on this show. We're updating her on what's going on. We're keeping her in the loop. We're starting off the trailer with a big nod to the Grand Dame of Potomac. She's not there, but if she were around, she would absolutely be included. And whenever she wants to come back, she will be back. That's sort of what the message sends to me. But then we're also moving forward. And again, this train is moving. We're looking forward. There's a new era. But Karen, you're part of that new era. And it's sort of this energy that looms over the show. But I love that they're also not harping on Karen being in prison and letting that be sort of the defining theme of the season. We all know that Potomac was getting a little bit too kind of in the muck and dark, and that would have maybe continued that trend. And instead, we have this trailer that promises sort of like a light and funny season, that there's still a lot of drama. And it seems like Stacey's really at the center of that drama. You know, I keep on mentioning the reunion, but that reunion felt like, you know, Giselle and Wendy got into this place where they can not only just coexist, but they can sort of lean into their sort of love-hate relationship with one another. Like, they are never going to be best friends, but instead of getting, you know, insulted or offended when the other one sort of makes fun of them, they sort of take it in stride and like hit right back at the other person. And it's sort of, they laugh at each other in a way that's not like evil or conniving, but it's just, you know, it's an acknowledgement they aren't best friends again, but they're on the show together. They're both very powerful women and powerful forces on this show. So they might as well lean into it and maybe, you know, maybe not like be an alliance, but still kind of weirdly also uplift each other through sort of being frenemies. Like, I just really like that dynamic. I think Wendy and Ashley have a sort of similar to a lesser extent dynamic, but I feel like they have more sort of possibility to get along in a bigger way. But, you know, the trailer leaves me with a lot of questions. Like, is Stacey really back with her ex-husband? Is it really Stacey versus everybody? You know, she admits to Wendy that she lied in New York about something. She also gets called out for having bad breath, allegedly. You know, other things that pop up. Does Giselle have a boyfriend? There's a Mauricio Umansky cameo randomly. And then, you know, obviously we all knew, again, that Monique is coming back to the show in a friend capacity. She was seen at DC Pride. But it was like, what's sort of the tie-in, right? Is Ashley bringing her because they have remained friends over the years? And what we end up finding out is that Ashley and Wendy kind of call out that apparently, allegedly, Stacy has been seeking out Chris Samuels and trying to date him after his divorce from Monique and after her divorce. And then the trailer cuts to Monique being like, no, that's not going to happen. And then we see her having a sit down with Giselle. We see her having a sit down with Wendy, who brings up the binder from the season 5 reunion, which is the last time we saw her. We see her in the parrot, sort of like knowingly having an evil laugh. It's just giving on all fronts. And I have to say, the people on Twitter know what they're fucking talking about. And they noticed that Monique's cast photo for this season is just a repurposed version of her season 5 cast photo. So she was a full-time housewife in season 5. They had this amazing photo shoot that season where they were all in their purple dresses. This season's photo shoot, they're all in green. And they just photoshopped her dress to be a green dress instead of a purple dress. You guys have to see the side-by-side. I retweeted it. It's really honestly wild. And I don't think they've ever done anything like that before. And honestly, I watched this trailer and I didn't think about Mia or Jacqueline once. Like, I was scrolling Twitter like 7 hours later and people were like talking about how Mia and Jacqueline weren't in it. And I was like, oh my God, I completely forgot about them. I hadn't thought about them all day. I'd watched the reunion 5 times. I'd gone on a podcast and talked about the trailer. I hadn't thought about Mia or Jacqueline one time. So that tells you a lot, honestly, about how much they're moving forward here. It just, again, it just makes me happy. It feels like they've really figured it out. I was scrolling Twitter and I saw this really interesting fact about Potomac that the account Dorinda Deadly pointed out. They pointed out that Potomac has lost 7 cast members since season 8. That's Karen, Candace, Mia, NECA, Robin, Charisse, and Jacqueline. The obvious caveat there is that Karen will be back. And that Charisse and Jacqueline were just friends of, who weren't super impactful in my mind. But it's an interesting stat. And honestly, it's not something to lament. It shows that I think they were really serious about figuring out what works for this show when it was sort of at a crossroads. And so they tried things out. Some things didn't work, some things did. And I'm so glad they tried it out. It showed that they really cared about the show and figuring it out. And they've got it. I'm also going to get to the Love Island reunion, as well as the latest episodes of OC in Miami. But I did want to read you some of these official descriptions for the cast members from the press release about the season of Potomac, because I think it kind of gives you a preview of what to really expect from each individual woman. So if you don't want to hear me read these off, fast forward a couple minutes maybe, but I thought that maybe people would find these interesting. So it says, the ladies are joined by new housewives Tia Glover, a British-Nigerian luxury real estate advisor, and Angel Massey, an outdoor experiential curator. Tia is a mother of 4 whose strong family values are matched by her sense of humor. Angel is married to an ex-NFL player and brings her family back to Potomac, ambitiously looking to grow her business. Friendly face Jazzy Rideau returns while Monique Samuels makes her long-awaited return to the franchise and, without missing a beat, stirs the pot as a friend of the housewives. Fresh off her stay in Bravo's Love Hotel, Giselle Bryant is embracing the single life with a few new prospects in the mix. As one of the ranking original housewives, Giselle is stepping up and bringing the ladies together, but never failing to keep them in check. After 3 long years, Ashley Darby is finally divorced. She's now balancing her role as a devoted mom with the tumultuous nature of the dating pool. Ashley's always down for a good time, but now has to ask herself tough questions as she looks towards her family's future. Wendy Osefo is back with big changes in both her personal and professional lives. While still dedicating time and effort towards the growth of her husband's cannabis line, she's also attempting to reconnect with a figure from her past with shocking results. After a memorable debut reunion, Stacey Rush returns with a fresh take on love, friendship, and her next chapter. When that chapter includes a reconciliation with her ex-husband, however, whispers about her past choices, present, and present connections raise eyebrows and voices among the ladies. Kiana Stewart is setting her bar higher, even if that means shaking up the status quo. She needs her boyfriend Greg to prove that there's a future in their relationship and questions the authenticity of certain members in the group. Tia Glover is an upper-crust British-Nigerian expat and comes to Potomac with a full house and a worldly perspective on family. As she navigates new friendships, Tia must decide whether to keep things classy or use her signature wit and speak her mind when the moment calls for it. No stranger to the DMV, Angel Massey is back and ready to reestablish herself in the P. She and her former pro athlete husband are the co-founders of a high-end outdoors outfitter, and she's focused on expanding her brand and reconnecting with old friends, which might not be as simple as she thought. So there you have it. Potomac Season 10 premieres on October 3rd. So fucking excited. Can't come soon enough. All right, let's talk about that Love Island reunion, you guys, because I don't know about you, but I found it to be pretty underwhelming and lackluster. I feel like I had no idea it was going to be 2 hours, first of all. I helped host a watch party at City Winery in New York City. Thanks to everybody who came to that, by the way. And we planned for it to be an hour, but it was secretly 2 hours. I thought that Ariana and Andy were a really fun duo as hosts. I feel like Ariana brought sort of the familiarity that she has with all the people, which was really nice. But then also Andy was sort of removed enough from the group that he was able to push on some things that maybe would have felt maybe harsher from Ariana. So I think they really balanced each other out and were a good sort of tag team duo. And there were definitely, you know, it's just so funny, like looking at the commentary for the show, because there are some very inexperienced and easily offended viewers of Love Island. Like, they thought that he was too harsh, and it's just really insane to think that. I really feel that. Like, it's like, have you watched Real Housewives before? Have you never, do you not know what Andy Cohen's style is? Like, he can go at it. And the only thing that he did in this reunion that was, in my mind, harsh at all was when he pushed Hoda on the sort of not buying her excuse that she can't talk about her current boyfriends because of Netflix and it's a legal thing. Like, that's a bullshit answer, even if it was kind of iconic. And Netflix put it on this billboard on Sunset Boulevard, which is perfection. But that was the only harsh thing that he did. Like, people need to get a fucking grip, honestly. But yeah, speaking of Hoda, like, she really fully lost me at this reunion. It just, I don't know, her inability to fully disown her own fans' racism towards Shelly and Olandria, who revealed, like, really, like, the wild, disgusting extent of the messages that they received from fans of Hoda because of their quote-unquote mean girl perception. I mean, Olandria said that she got photos of George Floyd's body with her face photoshopped onto them. And she told Hoda about all of this. And she said, Hoda, please, can you post something kind of calling them off? You know, like, can you just please ask them to stop being, you know, so racist and in their attacks? And she said that she would post. And you know what she did? She didn't post. And that just says everything about it to me. I thought they handled that moment, that sort of discussion with Hoda, with a lot of poise and grace and clarity, and just really impressed me. But I don't think she handled that moment well at all. And I also just wish that more people had stepped in to defend them, especially Nick and Ace, their partners. Like, I don't know, I feel like that's a common complaint from, that's sort of a across-the-board complaint for me about the reunion, is that, like, it felt like most of the issues, the discussion was kept between the two people that were involved in said issue, but nobody else would, like, jump in and say their two cents or call them out that it was wrong. Like, on Housewives, like, an issue might be between, I don't know, Larsa and Adriana, but everybody else weighs in on it. And that's what makes a reunion so good. It can obviously get to a point sometimes when, like, too many people are talking at the same time. But I just feel like these Islanders were too buttoned up. Like, are they too hesitant to look bad? Are they too media trained? I don't know. Get involved. Like, get your hands dirty a little bit. This is your moment, you know? Like, this is your last sort of big moment on reality TV for the time being. Like, let your voice be heard. And I just thought that there was not enough of that. I did think that the whole Hoda and Shelly footage about talking about Chris, I thought that kind of proved that Hoda said what she said that she had said. Said that she said she had said. Wow, that's a sentence right there for you. Like, I feel like she was pretty transparent with Shelly in that situation from what we saw looking back at it. I think Shelly was also kind of clearly uncomfortable, and she said yes, like, to sort of appease the situation. So I think maybe both things can be true. Let's see. I also love that they showed those two different deliberations, sort of like uncut footage of the guys deliberating sending Jeremiah home and the girls deliberating sending Hannah home. And I also love that we found out that the results of those two deliberations were the same as the America vote for those two potential eliminations. So I think that backed up their decision. Again, those are impossible situations, and I don't think there's any winning when it comes to the people who have to make those decisions. So yeah, I love that we saw that. Let's see what else. I felt that Austin was an idiot. He just annoyed the shit out of me on this reunion. I think the people who got out early on Love Island barely needed to be there, if at all. Like, I hate Zach with a K, but it was kind of funny having him sleeping on Zoom because he was involved in nothing. And so maybe more of those people should have been on Zoom as well. I thought Iris and Pepe were kind of like whatever. And now we know that they've likely broken up amid cheating rumors about Pepe. So it's kind of neither here nor there. But I also, speaking of those rumors, like, it's all based on this Snapchat that the alleged mistress sent to a friend where she was like, just hooked up with Pepe in a hotel lobby. And the Snapchat, first of all, looked like it was like 10 years old. And second of all, a hotel lobby. Who's hooking up in a hotel lobby? I need some answers on that. I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm waiting to hear from Iris or Pepe about that. But the other couple that, you know, unfollowed one another ahead of the reunion were Amaya and Brian. And I feel like they were clearly not telling the truth about some stuff. They were being cagey. You know, he said that he had this big indiscretion in it, and it ended up being that he was pouring shots for girls at a party that he was hosting. I don't know. There was something very bizarre about that reveal. I feel like Amaya wasn't really being her full self. But then again, I saw some clip about Austin talking on some podcast where he said that she was launching into him at some point during the reunion and they totally cut it out. But yeah, they broke up. And I think that gets into my other issue with this reunion is just sort of the timing of it and how much they talked about like these post-show podcast interviews that they all did versus like what actually happened on the show. Because to me, like, that's what the reunion is for. I don't know. I feel like when they talked about the podcast, even like they didn't show us clips. They didn't really read like verbatim quotes all the time. So we were kind of left to like, I don't know, do our own research, or they were like assuming that we had seen all these, which is impossible because there were so many of them. I don't know. I just kind of wish that it had either been filmed right when they got back from Fiji, so that it was mostly chat about what happened in the villa, maybe some stuff about sort of the social media reaction, the viewer reaction, but nothing about these like superfluous interviews that just kind of like stack up and becomes impossible to sort of keep track of all of it. I think the other option would have been to, you know, maybe wait a couple weeks, but forbid them from doing any press before filming the reunion. But I don't think that would ever happen because obviously Peacock wants to take advantage of the interest and the sort of the hotness around Love Island this summer. So like, they're not going to wait to do press because then you miss your moment. So I don't know, just film the reunion right away, because that way it would prevent them from having to lie about still being in press interviews, which Amaya and Brian definitely did a few times. And them and following each other right before the reunion is just like, it felt like it was like the embargo's up, you know, like it just felt like such suspicious timing, as I said on Tuesday's episode. So yeah, I don't know. And then Ace did this interview that came out the day after the reunion, and he said a bunch of wild stuff. I've only listened to half of it. It's his only really big interview since being on the show. Everybody else was doing all this press. He waited, which I think is weird because, you know, the big thing from the interview that I've seen everyone talking about is that he is shading Nicolandria and sort of the legitimacy of their relationship, kind of implying that it's not valid, it's not real, it's not legitimate, and they're not really in love. And he just kind of implied all that with some silence. You know, I guess you can think that if you're him, but like, that's your partner's best friend. That's apparently your friend. So like, it's fine if you and Nick aren't cool, but I don't know. It just felt really unnecessarily shady towards Olandria. And also, like, let's talk about Nick and Ace at the reunion. I feel like we barely got into that. And, you know, I still maintain that I think that Ace and Shelly had the strongest romantic connection of the season from the beginning. I know people think that's because they were dating a bunch before. I still don't really believe they were, like, dating before the show. But I think Olandria and Shelly's bond is the strongest connection overall of the season, period. Like, their friendship is, I think, real and true and a lifelong bond to me. And like, I see some people on online talking about how like she has to choose sides now because of Ace's interview and it's going to make her look bad regardless. And I'm just sort of like, that to me is only reflective of the online discourse around this. The heat will come off the interview in a couple days. Like people need to like really touch grass when in regards to Love Island season 7. It's the discourse online is enough. It's enough.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
All right, so let's talk about this week's Real Housewives of Orange County. I feel like it was basically like two big scenes/events. So the first big thing was Gina and Gretchen. They sit down to lunch with Kiki Monique. And We love Kiki, friend of the pod. And I'm glad that she got an opportunity to share her side of this on camera to really kind of clear the air in a way. But I also think, that if we're having, you know, the blogger, podcaster, Instagram account, journalist, whatever label you want to use for each person that we're talking about in these situations, I think if that person is coming on the show and we have to have a sit down with them, aren't we a little too in deep? You know what I mean? It's one thing to show a clip from a podcast or a radio show or an interview or what have you. Great. But like, this game of telephone has gotten so blurred and messy that we have to have Kiki on to clear the air in a way. I don't know. There's something about it that I'm just like, was this not a sign during production that like this has just gone a little bit too off the deep end in this particular situation? I don't know. Anyway, so Katie has maintained, even through the end of this episode, through the lie detector test, that when she met up with Kiki Monique for lunch, Gretchen was not even talked about. Meanwhile, Kiki denies that. She says that Katie came to her and she brought up Naked Wasted and she was like, did you know Gretchen had to go to the hospital the next morning? And did you know that she was drugged? She tells Gretchen that Katie says that you told her that. So Gretchen told Katie this, who then told Kiki. Gretchen's like, that's insane to me. Kiki has a good point here where she was like, if this was true, would it not have come out sooner? Like, why would Gretchen sit on this for 15 years? You know? Maybe she did. Who knows? But that's definitely a good point. You know, Gretchen feels betrayed by Katie. And Gretchen has this meltdown after Kiki leaves. And she was like, you know, everyone was warning me about Katie and I ignored them. And I thought, you know, they're all wrong about Katie. And I gave her all this big chance. And she's really upset about it. And in my mind, I think that you can read that two ways, right? You can read that as her just genuinely being upset that she trusted this person too much and she's not the person she thought she was. But I kind of think that she's really upset because it's making her look bad. You know, I really do believe that there was some sort of plan here that did not go as planned. And I think she's upset because she's like, fuck, I told Katie all this shit and it's blowing back in my face. And I shouldn't have told her this stuff. And so I think it's more about saving face than like actually feeling betrayed, if that makes sense. But also at this lunch, Kiki Monique made sure to mention that like Gina, FYI, when I went to lunch with Katie, she also brought up this thing that you asked her about last season. She was wearing something and you were like, is that an Asian designer? And I guess Katie took it as like Gina being insensitive and offensive. And Gina's perspective on it is like, wait a second. Katie said going into the season that she was going to like uplift all these designers by wearing a lot of Asian designers on the show. And then she ends up linking up with these two stylists and they start dressing her in Balmain and all these sort of mainstream designers that are not Asian. And so deep into the season, when she's really upset with Katie, who she, again, reminder, brought into the show, she kind of is like noticing what she's wearing. She's like, kind of to kind of like do a dig at her. She's like, is that an Asian designer that you're wearing right now? And in the moment, the episode flashes back to a moment that we had not seen, which is sort of this hot mic thing where Katie's like whispering to Jen, like, did you just hear what she said to me? Like, so that was a weird moment. And I think that Gina meant it offensively. I do think she meant it just sort of like as a way to do a dig at Katie. But I think it's a weird thing for her to choose to dig at her about. And I also am like, wait, Katie can do both. She can wear Asian designers and also wear a mainstream designer. It doesn't sound like she said she's going to wear exclusively clothes by Asian designers. So I don't know. It's just kind of a weird thing for Gina to find issue with. But she just thinks it was performative and sort of maybe indicative of how Katie is. So yeah, that was sort of an interesting little reveal from Kiki. And then by the way, just sort of because we're talking about the situation, Tamara was on Jeff Lewis's radio show this week, and she kind of outlined how she had found out about what Gretchen had told Katie, who had told Monique. So this guy from Daily Mail contacts Tamara after the reunion last year, and he's like, listen, you need to know that Gretchen's returning to the show. She's out here saying all this stuff about how you drugged her during the Naked Wasted thing. And, you know, you need to know because if she brings this up on the show, like, you should be prepared. So Tamara knows about this. And then Dave Quinn reaches out to her. And he calls her after lunch with Kiki. And he's like, listen, Tamara, Gretchen's out here saying stuff according to Katie. So Tamara knew about this already, and she basically has double confirmation that it's been said by Gretchen, I think. And the reputable journalist she revealed is Dave Quinn from People, and he was not named on the show. So that was just an interesting reveal that Tamara did on Jeff Lewis's radio show. So the other big thing on this episode of Orange County is the event at Emily's house where there are two lie detector tests. You know, there's the lead up to it where Heather tells the girls that Tamara's mad at her for not reaching out to her when she left New Orleans. And Gina has a great quote where she's like, "You can't play victim in a situation that you don't remember," because Tamara was so fucked up that night. So they all arrive and Emily has them write down all their questions they want asked to one another during the lie detectors. Then Tamara arrives last and Gina and Emily run up to her to nip their drama with her in the bud because, you know, one of them says, like, you know, we're going to have a pivotal day today for this group. And it just feels like, okay, they're planning something. They're orchestrating something, kind of. Like, it's a little bit too premeditated for me. So they have they show all of them. It's kind of a great little edited scene, though. It's like they show all of them being asked these shady questions by one another, going back and forth. And then it ends with Gretchen and Katie going at the same time. And it's kind of a really, I think it's a well-done edited episode. But Katie leaves a lie detector chair and the woman who's administering the thing goes, "She's full of shit." And then we find out that pretty much everybody told the truth about most things. There were a couple little lies here and there, but the big reveal at the end is that Katie had by far the worst result. She failed it by far the most. Then, like, after it's revealed that Katie, you know, she lied about basically everything involving this whole situation, they all believe the results fully, even though polygraph tests are like, I don't know. I'm not convinced. I'm anti lie detector. I think it's very gimmicky, and I don't think it proves anything personally. I don't know. I'm just sort of like, they take it at total face value. They all pile on Katie. They tell her, "We met with Kiki Monique yesterday," and there's just, it just kind of like feels like really like a pre-planned attack on her. And I believe that Katie is lying about a lot of this stuff. I actually do believe that. But I also believe Gretchen's lying. But I also believe that Jen is covering up for Gretchen. And I also believe that other people are lying in the situation as well. So I don't know why Katie has to take the full brunt of it from everybody. Like, for example, when it comes to Gretchen saying that she didn't go to the hospital, Shannon and Tamara are sitting right there next to her on the couch when the results are being revealed. And they don't speak up about it. You know, they're not like, "Well, Gretchen, you said in New Orleans that you went to the hospital. We both heard it." So that's very disappointing to me. And so Katie storms out and she talks to the producer and she's crying and Jen doesn't back Katie up and she's really upset. She's telling the producer, you know, like, "I know that our three partners have had calls about this." And as it pertains to the call that Slade made to Matt about, you know, Katie needs to cover up for Gretchen. Gretchen says that Slade did call Matt, but it was more to ask, what is Katie saying about Gretchen? Not cover up for her. I don't know. There's a lot of like claims being made this way and the other. And it ends the episode with a "to be continued." And it says, "This might be the last time anybody sees me with this group of women." So, and I saw an OK Magazine article, and I know I always say don't believe the OK Magazine articles, but it said that Katie's not going to be seen on the show for a little bit. So I think she's going to miss several episodes. She misses the Amsterdam trip. So yeah, that was a little bit of a rough ending there, I have to say. All right, let's talk about Miami quickly. It starts off with this little meetup before Julia's trip to ask her friend to be the godfather of her sons. And she tells the girls Alexia and Marisol are actually not coming. They have decided that they think that Stephanie holding this plane thing over everybody is too much. And it's giving them bad vibes and they're going to stay. And she just totally accepts it. You know, like I think it's so crazy that like she just, it just speaks to kind of how I think it speaks to how tenuous those friendships are. I think it speaks to how careful she is about staying in their good graces and how much she wants to be in their good graces by the fact that she just completely accepts that Alexia and Marisol aren't going to come to this huge day for her. It's the whole reason for the trip, basically. And everybody else sees the hypocrisy, so I'm glad it's called out. But I also liked the moment in the Sprinter van where Julia's like, "Listen, Stephanie, you can be bossy. Like, you just these all the rules and you like holding the plane over everybody." And Stephanie starts crying. She's tearing up about it. And somebody thanks her for flying them out there ahead of time. And she's like, "I don't need to thank you. I don't need to thank you." And it's like, wait a second. you're literally a whole, you're on this power trip of like, people need to behave on my plane. Like, I don't need any drama. I'm doing a seating chart. These are my rules. I can decide if you have to drive home instead of fly back with us. But now you don't need a thank you. That doesn't add up to me. And also, they get on this plane and it's just kind of a free for all. So like, what happened to the seating chart? It's funny watching this all play out because I feel like Stephanie doesn't understand that it's actually not about that she has all the rules. It's about that she keeps implying that she gets to decide who gets to go on the plane and when, and their behavior like in the group has to stay good, or else she can decide that you have to actually drive the couple hours home instead of being on the plane. That's what it is. It's the power trip. It's holding it over them in terms of, do you get the privilege of flying on this plane? Because nobody wants to be stranded while the other rest of the cast gets to fly back on the plane. So that's really what it's about, but she doesn't really fully understand that. They get to this amazing house, honestly, that Julia's friends live in, and they're all like, it's giving White Lotus. And I loved Lisa being like, it's giving White Lotus, and he's giving the gay guy from White Lotus, and I'm not trying to go out like Jennifer Coolidge. These gays are trying to kill me. Like, that was a great little Lisa quote, honestly, because it's, I'm like, I can't even like imagine Lisa Hochstein watching the White Lotus. Like, it was funny. We find out Lisa's officially divorced and Larsa won't even cheers to her on it, which is just, I mean, I'm not surprised, but come on, Larsa, come on. We do get some resolution in the Adriana and Kiki thing too. So Adriana pulls one of them aside and she's like, listen, like I couldn't sleep over this. Like, I was like, what did I say that was so offensive? And then she looked up wretched, which is the word that she said that she tried to say and meant to say, and it came out as ratchet. And I can see how those two can sound similar, especially, you know, with Adriana's accent. Like, I can see how it can be taken the wrong way. But I do believe when they say, like, ratchet is not really a word that seems like it would be in Adriana DeMora's vocabulary even. You know what I mean? So, you know, later in the trip when they go to, when they're all in their flamenco dresses and they go have that sort of moment in the big plaza, Adriana has, a really nice moment with Kiki where she's like, listen, like, I am so sorry that, like, it came out the way and I offended you. Like, that is, I did not mean to say that. That is not the word I was looking for. And I think they had a nice apology. I think they had a nice little moment. I believe they like each other. I believe they made up. So it was nice to see them move forward after that kind of miscommunication, and Adriana acknowledging that word that she said and that it was heard as was offensive. And so this trip to the plaza really kind of pops off. Stephanie confronts Alexia. She pulls her away from Marisol, which is weird because they both didn't go on the plane. And she's like, listen, why'd you do this? Why'd you not come on the plane? And to be fair, Alexia did kind of change her story, because at first she was just sort of like, I needed a day with Marisol, blah, 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 blah. But then the truth comes out. She's like, no, like, you're it's a power trip. You're holding the plane over everybody. And Stephanie doesn't remember making the threat of, you know, having people drive home. She kind of has selective memory there, but it's kind of chaotic because then Larsa gets into it with Lisa at the same time, right next to them. We have this hilarious moment where Kiki and Gertie are watching them all sort of pop off at the same time. And Kiki goes, now this is ratchet. A perfect confessional moment. And it's very telling and interesting watching this all play out from the point of view of Stephanie, because we keep hearing that Stephanie has no girlfriend. She doesn't have any female friendships. She also doesn't have a relationship with her sisters. And we're seeing why. She does not handle these conflicts well. She doesn't have good self-awareness in these conflicts. So I don't know. The more that we see from her in these moments, the more it kind of all makes sense to me. So yeah, those are my biggest takeaways from Miami and OC this week. I feel like the two pretty solid episodes again. And yeah, so that's it from today's episode of Gabbing with Gib. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you all have an amazing holiday weekend. I hope you soak up the last days of summer. Summer is also into September. So keep on enjoying the good weather that we're getting. And I hope everybody has a fun and safe holiday weekend. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this right now. And we'll see you several times next week, including an interview with an OG Roni cast member.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.